Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast from the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M University. I want to welcome you all here and thank you so much for downloading and listening to us today. We are so pleased to have our first return guest on the podcast. We have Mr. David Epstein with us today from Sports Illustrated. Hello, David. Nice to have you back.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, you're more than welcome. And I would remind everyone that you have the opportunity to win one of those nifty-looking podcast T-shirts. David has one already. I know he's wearing it proudly around New York City when he runs up there. And so listen for the question during the podcast, and if you're the first to respond with the correct answer to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, you'll win one of those nifty T-shirts. So let's get started. We asked David to come back on the podcast because he was the co-writer of an incredibly good article last week in Sports Illustrated in the January 24th issue. If you haven't picked that up yet, that's the one with the Chicago Bears and the snow on the front. But the article deals with the allegations against Lance Armstrong about using performance-enhancing drugs. Is that fair so far, David?
Yeah. That, and actually, part of it is also that he's the subject of a federal investigation, not really so much for his own use of drugs, but around the question of whether he directed doping activities when he was, a leader on the U.S. Postal team.
Right. And what was surprising to me was when I read the article that he could be, if it's found that he was guilty of that, he could be subject to some pretty severe penalties because, and I think actually jail time, because this was a government-sponsored race team?
That's correct. So they were actually getting, in the area, not exactly, about $10 million or so a year in sponsorship from the Postal Service. And so that's really part of his career when he was riding with the Postal Service cycling team is where the focus is, because it could potentially, it's a government agency, and so if it's found that he was directing inappropriate activities while they were sponsored by a government agency, there could be charges related to defrauding the government.
Well, and that's that would probably be the most severe charges that we've seen against anybody for using performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah, so originally when the stories about the investigation were coming out, it wasn't made that clear in kind of some of the news stories what was going on, and I think the impression that people came away with was that the government was targeting Lance Armstrong over whether he had personally used performance-enhancing drugs, and that's not really the case.
Oh, so it's whether or not he advocated for it within the team.
Yeah, and of course they're looking into his own use as well, but it's specifically with his time on the United States Postal Service team that's really in question, and not so much his time before that, with teams that weren't sponsored by a government agency.
Yeah. I was surprised. I didn't realize that a grand jury has been meeting in Los Angeles since, what, I believe August, looking at these allegations.
That's right. And of course, everyone's eager to know whether they're going to issue indictments or what's going to happen. But they've certainly interviewed a lot of people, because occasionally when I and my colleague Selena Roberts would interview people in the course of our own reporting, those people would tell us that they had, spoken with the grand jury or not. So they certainly seem to have heard from a lot of people.
Wow. So let me ask you a big picture question here. Why should we be concerned about this? We hear every day about articles about, elite athletes, having done performance-enhancing drugs. There's a certain, I think, cynicism out in the public about some of these elite athletes. Why should we care about this issue with Lance?
I guess that I don't know where even to dive into that, but I guess it depends from. So a question that I've gotten a lot of is, one is philosophical, where people have asked me, should we care about this in relation to Lance? Because even if he, I think I was asked this on CNN actually, even if he did use performance-enhancing drugs, hasn't the good that he's done for the world in raising money for cancer outweighed that? And to me, that's kind of an interesting philosophical question. You know, it's a do the ends justify the means question. And I think it's a lot easier to make that argument in retrospect than it would be if you thought about that problem where you're facing a young athlete saying, should I take these drugs and maybe I'll do something really good down the road? So to me, that's kind of a question of your perspective on that.
Right.
But
right.
But otherwise, this is, you know, if it's an issue of defrauding the government, I think it's if you want to enforce the law and have the government be able to hold people accountable, then you don't kind of want to necessarily look the other way towards these kinds of things. And for people who care about sports in general, if it turns out that Lance, you know, or other athletes are directing doping operations, then that means they have a lot of influence over their teammates. When you're a powerful member of a team, and you have influence over what other people are going to do, you know, maybe it'll makes people think twice about what they want to suggest that their teammates do, I guess. So it depends, I guess, if you're looking at it from the standpoint of being a taxpayer or an athlete.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the question for me about whether or not Lance encouraged some of his co-riders to embark upon doing some of these performance-enhancing drugs has always been a little interesting. I don't want to say a little silly, because coming through the sports environment, if the stud on your team, the one who was, you know, the champion and the winner, if he said go do something, most everybody else on the team did it because they wanted to support the guy who was winning. And I think on the cycling team, at least the cyclists that I've known, that's always been the way it is there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And even to go further, I know the government will be interested in whether, you know, Lance not only suggested that other athletes do things, but whether he facilitated access to drugs and or medical programs and things like that as well.
Hmm. You relate an issue or something that happened in your article about where they were going through customs with this bag full of all this paraphernalia, and the customs agents, they were able to convince them that it was all vitamins. Are customs agents really that gullible?
Well, that's the eyewitness account, I guess, that we were given, and this was in Switzerland,
yeah,
in St. Moritz. And so that's the account that we were given. I don't know that many customs agents on my own, but I will say that both in this story and in other stories where I've, you know, talked about private planes with athletes, I've gotten the impression that in many cases the private terminals are much easier and quicker to get through than are the public terminals.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would like that, actually, if it was easier to go through a private terminal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was also a little bit surprised in the article when y'all talked about some of the drug testing labs that had been involved and whether or not the some of the anti-doping groups actually tried to figure out how to help the athletes get around some of the drug testing. Was that surprising to you?
That was actually really surprising to me. So I reviewed hundreds of pages of transcripts from the late 90s and 2000 of meetings from the USOC Anti-Doping Committee, and there are a number of instances where it starts with marijuana, actually, where the committee is talking about testing athletes in the lead-up to Olympics for marijuana, but not in an effort to sanction them. It seems like they want to test them and make them aware that they're at risk of testing positive so that they won't then test positive at the Olympics. And in a couple cases, they expressed some concern that if the U.S. catches too many athletes, then we'll be viewed as like Germany or like China, who they seem to think will cover for their athletes. So there's some sense of, we know they're going to do this, don't we have to try to be on a level playing field? And I guess that brings up the question of whether the anti-doping authorities are trying to catch as many people as the next country or trying to basically give it their all, even if it means that American athletes would be at a relative disadvantage.
So it's almost like they're trying to provide prophylactic services to prevent being caught at the international level.
Yeah, it came up in some of the transcripts I reviewed before the Sydney Olympics. They talk about new methods of testosterone testing, and the solution they seem to come upon is to start it out as just calling it a research project and not for use in sanctioning the athletes, even if they're a positive test.
Interesting. So we have a situation where the watchdog agencies aren't necessarily watchdogging it.
At the time, in the latest transcripts I reviewed for the year 2000. So keep in mind, all this is historical, but it definitely was not exactly what I expected as I started reading through the transcripts, kind of thinking that they would be very gung-ho about almost seeing who they could catch, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. There was also some discussion in the article about some of Armstrong's tests had come back positive, but the B sample didn't test. Is that correct? Was that was in the article, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is correct. We reviewed, Selena and I, so in 1999, USA Cycling made a request for about a decade's worth of testosterone testing for an athlete that's identified only by code numbers, but people who were privy to that told us that they were Lance's, and you see him being tested every year, but it skips the year when he didn't compete because he had cancer. And several of those tests, there's kind of a wide, there's large fluctuation in the test, and three of those tests are above the 6-to-1 testosterone to epitestosterone ratio that was the limit at the time. Now it's 4-to-1. And so the letter explains that several of the historical tests that were asked for were lost, and the others couldn't, two of the three that were above the limit couldn't be confirmed for undisclosed reasons. A third that was above the limit, there's no indication that there was even a confirmation attempted. And when I went to Don Catlin, who was the head of that lab and wrote the letter, and read him the letter, he indicated that it was a once-in-a-blue-moon scenario when a test wouldn't confirm, and that three for the same athlete would be essentially impossible. He couldn't completely explain it, but said that being unable to confirm a 9-to-1 testosterone to epitestosterone ratio, which was the highest one in the letter, he said basically doesn't happen. So we're kind of, both he and we are curious what went on there.
Yeah. It's we have our own lab here where we deal with samples, and so I can understand when you have a large volume of samples that every once in a while you can misplace samples or you can misplace records. But yeah, not being able to confirm something like that when you so specifically have two different samples is that is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So we're not sure what else to make about that, and I'm still curious about the one that is over the 6-to-1 limit that didn't appear to have a confirmation attempt. So that's another thing that Dr. Kevin wasn't specifically able to explain. And to be fair, we were asking him to remember back, you know, a decade.
Yeah, a 9-to-1 ratio that's pretty large.
Yeah.
Pretty large. This leaves us, this whole episode leaves us with a lot of questions. And do you think those questions will ever be answered?
I don't know. I wish I had I wish I could sit in on what the grand jury is hearing. I have a lot better answer to that question.
Right.
I think we'll know a lot more in the near future, depending on whether the grand jury decides to indict or not indict, and then, you know, we can get a better sense of the charges. So anything, I think, would just be a total guess until we see what the grand jury thinks.
Yeah. So, David, I would guess that you've had a lot of feedback and some responses from other folks maybe not associated with this article. What kind of feedback have you gotten from this?
I'd say we've gotten a large volume of feedback, and it's been a mix from people who, you know, feel like we went some way to exposing a potential fraud, to a lot of people who were pretty upset with us. Definitely a lot of emails and letters to people saying, you know, don't you think that no matter what he did, it's all been worth it because of what he's done for cancer? And again, that I leave up to people's opinions, but we've certainly gotten a lot of that. And plenty of input that says, hey, who cares? Everyone was doing it. That means it's a level playing field, so just drop it. And some people who have been upset with kind of the, you know, what they view as long-term cover-ups, like with the transcripts that we reviewed with the USOC that have kind of allowed this to continue in sports and to have drug use continue in sports. So it's really been quite a range. There's no doubt that he really, Lance's story is really polarizing, and you know, be a platform for people to think about a lot of philosophical and athletic issues. So we've definitely taken some personal heat, and I understand that, and I understand the fact that some people feel like the government is out to get athletes, and that's probably more media bias than anything, that we just report on it more.
Yeah.
Athletes. But I understand where people are coming from.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing the outcome of this story. This is, I think, proving to be an interesting story even after he stopped riding competitively.
Absolutely, and I think he just finished his, you know, he came out of retirement, he just finished his last race in Australia. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really fortunate that we have you on the podcast today, because another topic that you've written quite a bit about actually is the rhabdomyolysis, which is where muscle breaks down and basically can lead to kidney failure and kidney problems. And we just had the issue that happened at University of Iowa a few days ago, where 13 football players were hospitalized for that. Have you been following that story?
I followed it a little bit, not very closely, but I definitely noticed it, and it piqued my interest because it's kind of at least the second cluster I've noticed of rhabdo in, you know, about the last calendar year at least. I remember there was one out in Oregon, I think it was, mm-hmm. with a high school team, where again it was like almost two dozen football players, I think, who ended up in the hospital for rhabdo. So it definitely piqued my interest.
Well, it's a bit scary because, you know, you have, I think everybody knows the risk associated with sport, but then when you have a large cohort like that all wind up in the hospital at the same time, probably because they were on the first or second day of practice, spring practice, they were really pushed very hard in training. That's a little bit scary, and that says something, I think, about the supervision of training.
Yeah, I agree completely, and I think if there's any theme to these stories that come up when it's multiple people ending up with rhabdo, I think you hit it on the head where you said it's very early in their training, and of course they want to be tough, and you want to, you know, push them hard to give them the signal that it's time to get serious, but there's clearly a fine line between what people are in shape to do, and it seems in every case when there are multiple people ending up in the hospital with rhabdo, it's early in the season because they're just not in shape for it yet.
Yeah. Now, since you've written about this, you certainly know a lot more about it than a lot of folks do. Is recovery from rhabdo most of the time, number one, pretty quick, but these guys will be able to come back and play ball again, won't they?
Oh, as far as my understanding, yeah, they should have no problem. I mean, the recovery is pretty quick as long as it's not catastrophic. Like in the case where if someone gets in a car accident and has very serious muscle damage or ends up with heat stroke and has very serious muscle damage, then, you know, you're talking about being in potentially mortal danger. But otherwise, they should be fine.
Yeah, so they should be able to come back and play. And it was just odd that all 13 of them came out in 2 days.
Yeah, I wonder what the specifics, and maybe you've seen more of this than I have, but the specifics of the conditions, because I remember sometimes it's, you know, aided by heat stress or energy drinks or things like that. And I remember the kids, the high school football players in Oregon had been working out the previous day in like a 100-plus degree weather in the wrestling room.
Wow.
And so, you know, I find it hard to believe that was a coincidence, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think any of the details have been officially released. I think there's been some Facebook postings from some of the players indicating that there was some pretty heavy-duty resistance training, but there's no indication about whether or not there was other dehydration and nutritional issues involved. So,
yeah, it's a little scary just because. So the first time I became acquainted with this was at an American College of Sports Medicine meeting and saw some samples that were taken from NFL players, and it showed kind of the dark color of their urine that signified that they had, you know, had some degree of rhabdo and were having protein going through their kidneys. And it seems like they really walk a fine line between being pushing really hard and being in some danger. And as far as I know, nobody really knows if there's any long-term effect of repeated mild rhabdo or anything like that. So I think that's something ripe for study if anybody's interested, and I'll be more than happy to report on your work.
Yeah. So everybody listening, let's do work on rhabdo, and David said he'll cover you.
Yeah.
Well, it also just goes to show that no matter how much we think we know about sports medicine and training and strength and conditioning, there are still some things that we don't know and things that we have to be careful with.
Yeah, and even with the things we do know, I think just getting it to the field.
Right.
So, helping the, especially at the high school level, it's just, you know, the coaches are doing the best they can, but a lot of times they're just so far from the kind of things that, experts know.
Right, right. Well, David, I think we're wrapping up here on our time. Justin, do you have that question for people?
I think I do. So the question is, what is the philosophical question that Mr. Epstein brought up in regards to whether or not we should be concerned with these accusations against Lance Armstrong?
Great. And if you've got the answer to that question, send us an email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. And remember, you can always go to our website at huffinesinstitute.tamu.edu and grab all those podcasts that are out there already or subscribe, and so they're automatically delivered to your inbox every Friday. And keep an eye on that website, because the new website is going to go up pretty soon, and I think you're going to be, I think everyone listening is going to be really pleased with what they see out there. David, thank you again for your time today. We really appreciate having you on. And I want to thank all of you for listening. And again, please join us next week. And in the meantime, have a healthy and happy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.